drive.
Good afternoon, morning, evening, whenever it is you're listening to this
thing.
We don't know
what time it is where they are at the point of listening.
We do not.
It's afternoon for us.
Yes. A balmy, sticky, Augusty afternoon.
It's balmy makes it sound like we're having, like,
drinks on the veranda.
Pina coladas in the Margaritaville. That's not. It's not. I got some iced tea.
Yes.
It's. This is how hot it is.
How hot is it?
I'm drinking iced tea.
Oh, right. As opposed to your usual hot tea.
I know that Bianca will want to know, even though I have not photographed this preparation. I made a big pitcher of hibiscus iced tea. Mm. It's delicious.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, this is not a podcast about beverages. This is a podcast.
It kind of is.
It's a podcast of the cinema.
Occasionally, it is a podcast of beverages.
With some beverage discussion thrown in for leavening's sake.
I was so overwhelmed by the heat last night. Let me explain something to people who don't understand what's happening.
Before you do that, let's tell them that you are Dave White.
Oh, yeah, that stuff. All right, critic, my name is Dave White.
Film critic on hiatus from linoleum-night.com.
I'm on a hiatus from everything.
Well, you are finishing book number two, Keep It Heavy, Man. Available.
That's the title of the new book.
Soon at some point.
Well, yeah, everything is going to be available soon. Everything is taking so much longer. Like the audiobook that was going to be all, hey, we're going to get this done. Uh-huh. You know, like that is taking an enormous amount of time.
Yes.
It's so easy to get up on this. This podcast is like falling off a log. Like we sit down and we turn on the microphones and then we just jaw on and on for an hour or more. The audiobook requires me being in that tiny little recording space.
Yes.
In the dark, except for a lamp. It also requires that I read a book out loud without mistakes.
Right.
This is where the problems begin. I make errors.
Yes.
So, things are going slowly. And,
this podcast, by the way, is like rolling off log for you, because all you have to do is sit down and start talking.
I know, you do the hooking up the machines and all the podcast machine. Yeah.
And incidentally, I'm Alonzo Duraldi, film critic, film reviews editor for The Wrap, and film critic for What the Flick on the Young Turks Network.
I'm only on hiatus until the second book is finished being written.
Right.
And the audiobook is finished being recorded. I am the film critic for linoleum-knife.com, formerly of movies.com. Mm-hmm. That's my,
You have things.
My brain is so hot right now that last night, first of all, yesterday I put all of our drinking glasses in the freezer.
Right.
Do you live in a place where you don't need air conditioning until you do? That is where we live. Los Angeles is a temperate climate.
Yeah, usually.
It is straight up about 69 to 72 degrees every day. Almost all year long. You can't do that fan. You can hear the fan going.
I can still hear the fan going. You can hear our ceiling fan going.
Not really, but that hand fan, Madonna, Karl Lagerfeld that you're using right now.
I know, Karl Lagerfeld, but it's hot. It's bloody hot in there.
I know. But then there are these moments where you do need the air conditioning. Like it used to be like 3 weeks out of the year. Non-consecutive days of hotness.
Our air conditioning sponsors in the Valley, by the way, have once again invited us to come.
To come stay over at their house.
Yes, yeah.
That's maybe not a bad idea. Yeah. I don't know. Well, I'll tell you what I did last night, though. Put all those drinking glasses in the freezer, so all my drinks are perfectly chilled. I took a cold shower before bed. Just that cold water just pouring all over me. And then I took two Aleve PM. And if they would sponsor this podcast, it would make my life, because they are a product that I can get with. Mm. I stand behind Aleve PM as a product.
It's good stuff.
As I was heading off to bed, while you were at CineFamily.
Yeah.
watching Real Genius for the 11th time.
But in 35mm,
yeah,
which I had not seen it that way in 30 years.
I know.
And
it had been actually like weeks since you had seen it in a theater.
Well, yeah. Who knew that we were going to get two opportunities? Also, Gabe Jarrett and Jonathan Gries were there, and one of the Mythbusters was there to talk about what does and does not actually like make any scientific sense in that movie. And there was a Popcorn House photo booth afterwards, which I took a picture of. It's on our Instagram page, Linoleum Cast.
Linoleum Cast on Instagram. I just banged the mic. So, we currently have a house guest.
Correct.
It is a friend of ours named Graham. He's been here most of the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hanging out in the guest room.
Mm-hmm.
Till he finds a new place to live. As I'm heading off to sleep last night, 15 minutes after having taken my Aleve PM. Seriously, please be our sponsor. He said, I'm going to watch some TV. Is that going to bother you? Are you going to be able to sleep if the TV's on? And I was like, I don't think I'm going to be having any problems in a few minutes. I hit the bed, and I thought, I'm going to look at my phone for a minute because it's my new phone. It's like a toy that I'm still sort of in love with, experiencing the newness and learning of it all. I don't remember putting the phone down. Seriously, that is how good Aleve PM works. I was knocked out for about 8 hours, and it was too hot to sleep last night.
Mm-hmm.
But my body didn't know that. I was under.
Now
I am hooked on dolls.
I would have had an Aleve PM last night myself, but I knew I was only going to get about 6 hours of sleep, and I didn't want to dice with that. Because Real Genius, you know, was supposed to start at 10:30, but between all the guests and the film,
right,
the film scorching at one point and all the things.
Did it really?
It did, yeah.
Oh, my.
And it was, the whole audience went, ooh, it was, we all felt bad about it. Anyway, it was 1 a.m. by the time I got to bed last night, and I knew I had to get up early this morning to catch a 9 o'clock show of Straight Outta Compton so we could talk about it today.
How many people were at Straight Outta Compton?
About a dozen, but it was the 9 a.m. show. You know,
that's the best time.
It's having
to go.
A big weekend.
When you go to the Grove, you live in Los Angeles, you go to the Grove, go at the first screening of any time, any movie, go to the first screening of the day, because they start their screenings at the Grove. I have been to movies at the Grove as early as 8 a.m.
Yeah.
For different,
like, the movie theater is open before most of the stores are.
Yeah, no, it is open before the stores are. And so, like, especially on summer weekends, mm-hmm. they will do what amounts to nearly round-the-clock screenings.
True.
on big movies.
Because they're showing at midnight, too.
And because of that, what they will then also do is just extend the screening times of other films, too. So, you know, something huge opens, and they're doing those almost round-the-clock screenings. The benefit for you is if you're going to go see something else, and you want to go
in its fifth week,
you want to go at breakfast to see a movie, you totally can. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, they got something running for you, and it's really nice. You're alone almost. You've just had a nice breakfast. You get a movie in the morning, and there's no one bothering you.
It's true.
How did you feel about it? Does anyone not know what Straight Outta Compton is about? Everyone knows what it's about. It's about NWA and their rise to success and the way that they changed hip-hop.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as people who listen to this show know, I do not know the hip-hop very well at
set
all.
Set adrift on memories.
Yeah, okay, fine. It was happening around me, and I never got into it. Because the people I knew who were into hip-hop were like the white guys wearing the red Adidas tracksuits who thought they could break dance.
Those guys were annoying.
Yeah, and so I was just like, I'm not. No, I thought owning a Public Enemy cassette was going to turn me into that guy, and so I just didn't go there. So yeah, so I kind of missed all this. So
but
this
you've never really had much affinity for hip hop.
Not really.
You're not a hip hop listener.
No,
it doesn't interest you.
Not really.
And it's not about your age.
No, nope.
Because I'm 3 years older than you.
No, I know.
And for me, hip-hop has always been there. I'm 51 years old. This is the thing, too. You know, if you grew up with hip hop and you were around for, you know, the beginning of it, you're in your 50s now.
Yeah. I mean, we had, when I was a little kid, we had the Rapper's Delight 12-inch, you know. But by the time, I mean, you know, I was in college when Yo Bum Rush the Show came out and stuff, but I just, it was not on my radar at all.
The minute I had the Rapper's Delight single, this was, I guess I was in ninth grade. I was a freshman in high school. And you know, everyone considered it sort of to be a novelty record.
Right, exactly.
And then it turned out to be not a novelty record. Out came all this other stuff, like, suddenly. And all through the 80s, you know, I it ran on a concurrent parallel track to punk rock and post-punk and hardcore. They were both cultures that were outside of the mainstream and not considered to be real music, real art by the mainstream culture.
Right.
You know, hip-hop was a novelty all through the 80s, and you know, the stuff that would become, you know, alternative, it wasn't even a novelty. It was just this ugly outsider kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, Run DMC comes along, and they become super famous. But again, everyone still thinks of it as a novelty. White people still think of it as a novelty. And it took, you know, this that forward push of both groups like NWA, all the West Coast sounding stuff, and all the East Coast conscious rappers like Boogie Down Productions and Public Enemy, and in her moment, Queen Latifah as well. She came up with that whole, like, De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest, and blanking on the other names, but like that, those guys all were, you know, that's where things started to push forward into the mainstream culture.
Right. So yeah, so this movie.
So you didn't care.
It was in my life. No, I didn't. I wasn't listening to it. It wasn't speaking to me.
You didn't want to be a white person, cliche. Hip hop fan.
Well, and frankly, if the music had spoken more to me, I would have figured out a way to accommodate it in my life. But it didn't. I found it kind of, I don't know, discordant or whatever. It just didn't.
It was. It was discordant, and that's why. What?
Of course.
I was like, oh, this is like punk rock, but not. You know, that's how I filtered it.
And enough time has passed now, and this stuff has become so absorbed into the mainstream and the day-to-day that now when I listen to the Straight Outta Compton stuff in Straight Outta Compton, I get it. Like, I can hear what it's about.
Right.
1988 me would not have, you know. So I think the movie does a lot well in that for somebody like me who is coming into this pretty much cold, not knowing any of this stuff, it's an interesting story. It does a very good time of kind of job of capturing the time and place. Couldn't be more relevant, certainly.
No, I know this is perfect timing, actually. Unfortunate perfect timing.
Sadly, exactly. But I mean, when the line from Ice Cube writing and performing "F the Police" to, you know, Ferguson and the Black Lives Matter movement is like a direct
solid. No, it is a direct line.
Direct line. So, you know, there's a lot that
can we just digress here for a minute?
Let's.
What is going on with all these stupid movie theaters bringing in cops? Who's shooting up movie theaters
lately? Yeah.
White dudes.
Yeah.
White conservative, crazy Tea Party militia types and straight up lunatics.
Right. This is a crazy sort of 90s flashback to like New Jack City or something.
Oh, someone shot somebody at the New Jack City opening. Now we have to have cops at Straight Outta Compton.
20 years ago. Yes. Yeah. That's ridiculous. You know, it's well acted. I think it starts out really strong and kind of makes the case of who these guys are and where they came from and why they're important and all that stuff. And then at some point you get then the screen goes black and it's 1993 and you're like, oh wait, there's still more, because this is a movie about a band who made one album. They made one album.
Yes, but.
All of those people went on to do other influential stuff. I get it, but there's
along comes Tupac. Along comes Snoop.
Right.
And without N.W.A., those guys, they would have existed anyway, obviously. But that sound, that aesthetic, followed through with those guys.
But they're breezed through so perfunctorily that this movie either should have been like a mini series on Netflix or something that was 8 hours.
Right.
Or it should be a lot shorter than the 2 hours and 20 minutes. Like, there's a lot of this movie that could have just been a card at the end explaining what happened. We didn't really need to see, you know.
No, I was okay with the whole epic
length. I think it kind of runs out of things to talk about, and it just sort of like, well, we gotta kill Eazy-E, and we gotta bring everybody else up to date.
We gotta kill Eazy-E.
You know. So I don't know. For me, it kind of runs out of gas.
Your mission? Kill Eazy-E. Should you choose to accept it? We gotta kill Eazy-E.
The other, you know, also this is a movie, and not doesn't have this issue nearly as badly as Notorious did. The Notorious B.I.G. movie.
I liked that one kind of too.
But that movie went out of its way to turn him into a saint in a ridiculous way.
Yes,
this movie is kind of doing that because it is produced by.
It's kind of doing it with.
Dr. Dre,
with Dre and Cube,
and Ice Cube, and Eazy-E's widow, although she apparently allowed them to turn Eazy-E into like almost the villain of the piece. I mean, the real villains of the piece are Suge Knight and the white manager.
Yeah,
but Eazy-E was sort of like kind of dopily going along with things when he shouldn't have, and you know, kind of selling out his friends.
He was Eazy-E first, everybody else second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's you know,
that's kind of really actually how that was.
No, though, I'm so, sure, yeah. but there's a scene where you know Dre has met this woman and he's like trying to get her to move in with him and she brings up something. Well, I mean, you know, the shooting and the assault charges, blah blah. And I'm thinking, I'm sorry. First, I'm hearing about these. The movie has not bothered to show me any of this.
Here's what the movie does really well. It shows you Dre and Cube as musical geniuses.
Yeah.
They are those things. They were those things. Dr. Dre is an incredible producer. Ice Cube, an incredible lyricist.
However, because you saw this at a press screening. I paid and saw this with folks.
Yes.
The last trailer they showed before this movie, Universal has attached to this Universal movie,
okay,
is for Ride Along 2. So the last thing you see before Straight Outta Compton starts is this reminder of, oh yes, Ice Cube used to be this like dangerous poet of the streets who the FBI thought was a revolutionary and tried to smack down, but now he's a lovable funster.
Playing a cop.
So that's a weird little semiotic twist.
What is it that Joanna Gleason said about him?
It wasn't Joanna Gleason. It was what's her face from Blade Runner? Other red haired actress. I'm blanking.
I thought she was the one that was in like Ghosts of Mars.
No, it wasn't Joanna Gleason. It was Vamp. You tell the story. I'll look her up.
Rene Russo.
No.
Which one was this?
No.
Pause so we can find out the information.
Joanna Cassidy. At Comic-Con one year,
she said. I don't know why they call him Ice Cube, because he's so warm and cuddly.
Well, the makers of Ride Along 2 would like you to think that
he's warm and cuddly. Did you ever see the PSA he did for, remember when Lacma was doing the California thing? Was it Lacma or the Hammer? Or Mocha? They were doing like from, like, it was all about like your favorite era of California 20th century. And Ice Cube did a whole video about Charles and Ray Eames.
Oh, no, I did not.
It was really great. Huh. Yeah, how much he loves Charles and Ray Eames.
I'll see if it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
And he is played in the movie by his son, O'Shea Jackson Jr.
I didn't know that. Walking into the press screen.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm just like, where'd they get this kid who looks just like Ice Cube? Like, this kid looks just like Ice Cube.
It's the role he was literally born to play.
Yeah, it was like, O'Shea Jackson Jr. Okay.
And he's really good.
He is really good.
Again, it's sort of like with LeBron and Trainwreck. It's like, well, I don't know what else you can do, but you got this nailed, you know? Well, I want to see what else you got as an actor, but, you know.
Anyway, going back to what I was saying before.
Sorry, forgive me.
They do a really good job of filling you in on how important these two guys were to the shaping of the band, and to, you know, again, pushing hip hop into the future.
Sure.
They were Nirvana of hip hop. Mm. After them, everything changed.
Right.
Okay. But because they are the producers, you don't get much about mistakes or errors or character flaws that perhaps they might have had, such as I keep talking about, Dre beat up women.
Mm-hmm.
He beat up Dee Barnes in 1991, like at the height of it all. Dee Barnes was a rapper and a TV host of a hip-hop show that was on Fox. He beat up Michelle A. Pop, you know, R&B singer Michelle A, who was his girlfriend at the time.
And she's mentioned very much in passing.
She is the mother of one of his children. She had the hit No More Lies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great song. She is mentioned in passing. If there is a person in the film that is meant to be her, she is the camera and the script never point her out to you.
Mm-hmm.
So she doesn't exist other than in passing mention. He beat up Terry B, who was a rapper on Ruthless. See, Michelle A recorded for Ruthless, and Terry B also had a single out on Ruthless. Not just a single, more than one. Terry B was a rapper, and he beat her up too. And so, Terry B isn't even mentioned in this movie. She doesn't exist. Yeah. You would never know this about Dre.
He comes off as kind, misunderstood, not even misunderstood artist. Just like artist.
Yeah.
Genius.
Great artist, you know. who never did anything wrong.
And I'll tell you, the second, when they get to the closing credits and we see the real guys, the second I saw Dre's face, I felt like a punch in the stomach, because the main thing I think of when I see him is that interview he gave in the early Ooze where he goes, I don't care about gay people.
Right.
And I just thought, ugh. I just spent 2.5 hours watching gay haters and their rise to fame and popularity.
One gay hater.
Ice Cube. Do you want me to go to Google? I know he rapped something at some point.
Something about gays?
Yes.
Did he? That may be true. Perhaps Ice Cube has rapped in a homophobic way.
Look, and
maybe.
I'm sure that, you know,
I guarantee he's over it by now.
Well, exactly. I'm sure that, you know, showbiz mogul Ice Cube and, you know, guy who sold Beats to Apple, which is run by a gay CEO for $2 billion, Dre,
everyone learned, everyone evolved.
But you know what? The Beastie Boys apologized. I'm still waiting for these guys to speak.
What did the Beastie Boys do?
The Beastie Boys put out a thing basically apologizing for all the stupid stuff they said about gay people on their first record.
They said things about gay people on License to Ill?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
You weren't listening.
I was listening.
But you don't respond to this stuff because you're a self-hating gay man.
Look,
I'm the one who has to get offended on everyone's behalf because you don't notice.
They ain't talking about me.
So, you know, still waiting for my apology, billionaires. Whenever you feel like it.
I mean, I'm more concerned about the sort of lack of reality about that kind of thing than I am about whether or not anyone ever said anything not nice about gay people. Because in spite of these character flaws, in spite of these, you know, artistic, affronts,
mm-hmm.
they were amazing. And the film does a really good job of pushing you into that frenzy of excitement. It is a really, it is a rousing kind of film.
Yeah.
It makes you excited and happy about their success and their overcoming of these obstacles that were in their way.
Yeah, I mean, they
tie...
And
it all sort of fell apart with fighting and killing and AIDS and stuff like that.
Yeah, they tie in the L.A. riots in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
And, like I said, I think the first half to two-thirds of this movie is really captivating.
It is a very good movie with some problems.
And then I just kind of feel like it outlasts itself. It either needed to be longer. They needed to maybe, tell us more about... MC Ren and DJ Yella, who, as Whitney said, were the and the rest of this movie,
Ren gets almost nothing to do. Yella gets a bit of character development by them showing you...
He's a skirt chaser.
He's a ladies' man. and he was. You go back and look at the pictures of the real guys, Yella was handsome.
Mm.
Then he became a porn director.
Really? Follow your bliss.
He became a porn director, yeah. And he's not doing that now.
Paul Giamatti is really good in the thankless role of the, vampire white manager.
He was. He was the white devil.
That's another thing in this movie that drove me bananas. All right, NWA post Ice Cube... records a song that disses him. He comes back blazing, guns a-blazing, taking them down person by person, and yes. refers to, the Jew, manager.
Yes.
And then, in the movie, when a white interviewer tries to call him out on that, he's like, what? I'm talking about this one guy. And it's like, okay, I'm sorry. If an artist was mad at Ice Cube and called him, a white artist was mad at Ice Cube and called him the N-word.
Right.
And then said, well, I'm not talking about all of them. I'm just talking about Ice Cube. Ice Cube would not buy that argument. I do not buy that argument from Ice Cube, especially when he's got two Nation of Islam bodyguards standing by the pool. And when the guy asks about that, Ice Cube gets all offended about it. I'm like, what is going on here?
That interviewer needed to be shown the door.
That interviewer was asking the right questions. Ice Cube being a big baby.
Big ice baby.
Big ice baby. Is Suge Knight alive?
Suge Knight is alive. He may currently be in jail. Speaking of Suge Knight, he was the other man that Michelle A. became involved with.
Oh, well.
So she knows how to pick him.
Totally.
She is the mother of his child as well. Currently, she can be seen on R&B Divas LA,
really?
Which is a very good show.
Ah.
It's a show. She's amazing.
Is that the show with Kiki?
No. That's Love and Hip Hop.
I can't keep
it. I think that's Love and Hip Hop.
Okay.
Kiki's in Love and Hip Hop. Kiki was in... No. Kiki was not in Brownstone. Kiki was in some other group. Anyway, I'll go do my research.
Thank you. We need to know. If Paul Giamatti is the white devil in this movie, Suge Knight is the black devil in this movie. Everything he does in this movie is just psychotically violent and awful.
Yeah, they shoot the character of Suge with this sense of menace. Time he's on screen, there's this who will he murder first?
Yeah, he's the Shape from the Halloween movies, basically. Before he had a name,
they're not fond of Suge in this film, but overall, I think it's a very good movie,
worth seeing.
There are
certainly.
Some
it is flawed.
There are some problems. I one more thing before we stop talking about it.
Mm.
I wish that they had focused more on, some of that wild stuff than on. you know, you took my money.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of record negotiations going on.
The whole, like, I don't care about rich people taking other rich people's money. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I look at that stuff happening and I think, oh, rich person taking another rich person's money. Mm. That's unfortunate. Send lawyers after each other.
And that's great cinema right there.
Yeah, I would have liked for a little more wildness. But you're not going to get that until Dr. Dre and Ice Cube are not in control of the product. So,
although I'm sure O'Shea Jr. will probably make sure that movie doesn't get made either. This is why you people need to make ripped from the headlines movies where they change all the names and they change the details just enough so they don't get sued. That's how you tell the story.
Dreamgirls.
For instance.
Not, that film is not about Diana Ross.
Heavens no. Or Barry Gordy. What are you even thinking? There was, this says a couple of sort of music biopic sort of shortcuts. Like,
yeah.
Okay, there's this amazing scene where they're literally just standing outside the studio in Torrance, and that's enough for the cops to harass them.
That scene is incredible. Yeah,
very powerful scene.
Yeah.
And then 30 seconds later, Ice Cube writes F the police. I'm thinking, I bet that was a little bit of a time lapse.
He might have been freestyling that. You don't know. Mm. We don't know how long it took him to write it. He may have gotten on the mic and just done that.
It just, well, he writes it down in this movie. He chose
whatever. He wrote maybe he wrote a little sketch of a lyric.
Maybe. Okay. It didn't quite ring true to me, but maybe I'll buy that. The other one was, you know, the end of the movie. Eazy-E has finally started talking again to Cube and to Dre, and, you know, their old friendships are rekindled, and they've gotten rid of White Devil, and, you know, NWA is going to get back together, and it's going to be amazing, and then while they're waiting for Dre and Cube to come over to the house...
I'm having a bit of a cough.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I got the AIDS cough.
Eazy-E is Camille in this movie. Like, the second he starts coughing, you know it's all over. But, like, they're waiting for them to come to the house, and whoom, you know, he hits the floor, and then it's all downhill from there.
Right, right.
Very convenient.
I was very sad when he died.
In real life?
He was always my... Eazy-E was always my favorite. I remember in 1986, 87, listening to the Dallas community radio station, KNON.
Yeah.
They had a hip-hop show on late at night, and they played Boys in the Hood all the time. Mm. That's such a good song. and I
did not know that that was a song before it was a movie title. I'm sorry to say. I'd never heard of it.
Did you learn that today?
I learned
that
today.
That's a thing you learned
today? That's a thing I learned today.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Really?
Really. Ask me about Burt Bacharach.
I have failed you. We have been a homosexual couple for almost 20 years. And how did I not communicate that to you? What is wrong with you?
Look, it just was not part of my world. Anyway, so you heard it on KNON. What about it?
I don't even know the ending of my own story anymore.
Eazy-E was always your favorite.
Yeah. Cuz he had that He had an obnoxious sounding voice. Mm. I think that's kind of what I like the most about him. Because he sounded snotty. Mm. He sounded punk rock to me. And that's why I thought he was terrific. You didn't know it was a song.
I didn't know it was a song first.
At the press screening, half the audience... It was a full house. Uh-huh. When he starts doing that song, mm-hmm. half the audience seriously starts like moving their arms in the air. People like rapping along with him.
Now the people are the people in the movie performing or lip syncing?
Maybe a third of the audience. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. They might have, like, it didn't sound like original versions to me on some of the songs.
Mm-hmm. And there's somebody gets a credit in the closing credits about, like, new orchestrations or something.
Yeah, I would have to go look at the music credits of the film to know if they were lip-syncing or if they were actually doing the Sissy Spacek and, you know, singing as Loretta Lynn.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, also opening this weekend...
The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yes.
Which is about bad people in Europe.
In great suits.
In 1963, in amazing clothing. Mm-hmm. They have a nuclear bomb, and they're going to use it. This means that Henry Cavill and what's-his-face?
Army Hammer.
Army Hammer. They together have to team up. Now, right. Cavill is an American CIA mm-hmm. guy. And Army Hammer is a Russian KGB guy. Mm-hmm. They have to team up with Alicia Vikander.
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 From Ex Machina.
From Ex Machina. And they all have to stop the nuclear bomb people. Now, the nuclear bomb people are headed up by an impossibly glamorous, tall, blonde woman played by...
Elizabeth Debicki.
Elizabeth Debicki.
From Great Gatsby.
Yes. This is a spy film that looks and moves and feels like a spy film would have looked and moved and felt in 1963, and that is when it is set.
Right.
So it's a period film.
The original TV show, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., was one of a gajillion James Bond knockoffs that were happening at that time in every medium.
And yes.
Movies and TV and novels and everything else. And this is a sort of affectionate return to that era of not 007, but trying to get as close to 007 as right. we can. And it's super stylish. It's directed by Guy Ritchie, but he's not...
Being Guy Ritchie
about it. He's not like getting all Sherlock Holmes hyperactive with the camera. He just kind of goes with the style and the kind of ridiculousness of it all.
His man humor is sort of dialed back, too.
Yeah, there's some of it.
But. There's a bit of it, but there's not a ton of it. Yeah. In the interactions between Army Hammer and Henry Cavill, you see it happening. But it's not... It doesn't overpower the movie.
No.
And the other thing that doesn't
overpower... And there's overpower, even some of the Guy Ritchie crypto-gay stuff going on.
A little bit, but not too much. Tons. Not too much. What also doesn't overpower the film is action. If you've seen Mission Impossible recently, that is a nonstop action film.
Right.
This is...
People making banter at cocktail parties.
Yeah, this is people sort of outsmarting each other and, you know, zooming each other and sneaking around. And you know, there are some action sequences, but they aren't... They feel like the movie's sort of like, oh, yes, 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 we'll get through this action sequence and then we'll go back to being stylish. and I think that's part of the pleasure of the film.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a Pizzicato 5 video.
Yes! That's perfect. It is kind of a spy movie that's about the idea of spy movies, you know, in a way. And the plot is one just giant MacGuffin after another, because really, who cares? Certainly the cast doesn't. They're being stylish, and they're being fun, and they're having a good time.
They're cavorting. There's really nothing other than that happening.
Yeah, I really like this.
I enjoyed myself fairly thoroughly.
It is tanking and not probably going to ever get any
sequels.
Everyone's going to see Straight Outta Compton this weekend.
Well, yeah.
And which sucks, because I'm glad that Straight Outta Compton's doing well, but I would also have liked to have seen Man from U.N.C.L.E. strike, because my God, we had to sit through a second Sherlock Holmes movie. I would much rather see a second Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. The suits are impeccable, and the women's outfits are and hairstyles are the same.
So on point.
The weirdest part of the film for me was all the accents, because each cast member was playing a different nationality from the one that they actually are.
Except Hugh Grant.
Except for Hugh Grant, who doesn't have much to do anyway. Yeah. But Henry Cavill is British, playing American. Army Hammer is American, playing Russian. Alicia Vikander is Swedish, playing
German.
Well,
yeah,
playing German, but also British.
No, German. She's straight up German. They rescue her out of East Berlin.
Well, then her accent is all over the place.
Oh, and Elizabeth.
I never knew exactly what country she was supposed to be
well,
from.
But, you know, she's a German woman speaking English to English speakers. So, you know, if she learned via, like, you know, Berlitz or something, you know, she would have a bit of a British accent.
I didn't know where she was supposed to be from. She sounded vaguely European.
And then Elizabeth Debicki is Australian playing Italian.
Yeah.
It's nutty.
It's a fun, silly film. It doesn't have anything to say.
No.
About anything.
It is the perfect August diversion, hey, there's air conditioning movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and good stuff to look at.
Yeah, totally.
The people, all four, I'll tell you this, all four of these leads, these two women and these two men, they're all of them almost impossibly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Whitney, at the end of the movie, turned to me and he said, I want to make out with Henry Cavill's hair. And then I said, you know what? He's kind of got the Alonzo Duralde hair, although it's not it's not gray. Like,
yeah, his is jet black.
Yours is all gray now, but you've got that same sort of like thick, wavy like hair that people look at and go, how'd you get that hair? What you doing? How is that happening on top of your head?
It's all genetics.
That amazing wavy hair that you've got. So nice. I look in the mirror every time I get out of the shower now. I look in the mirror and you know your head's all wet and you get out of the shower. I look in the mirror and I can see my scalp. I have always had very thin, wispy, fine hair. And I look in the mirror, and I look down, and there's just scalp under my hair. And I think, this is all going away in the next 5 years. Like, in 5 years from now, I will be bald on top of my head. There will be nothing left. If there is anything left, it'll just be little sad, little lone strands just clinging to life in the face of a doom-filled future. You're going to be 90. And you're going to have the hair of the most interesting man in the world. It's going to be just like, well, hello, I'm 90.
Well, I have three older brothers.
Enjoy my incredible hair.
I have three older brothers, and I have to say, they're doing pretty well still with the hair.
Yeah.
They've got maybe big foreheads now, bigger than they used to, but beyond that, yeah. It's all there.
I think Fernando's got a bit of a bald spot going on in back.
Maybe.
I think.
Well, he just
I may be wrong about that.
60.
It may be Javier. One of them has kind of a balding spot going on in the back, but I now can't remember. All your brothers look alike to me. I don't know.
Oh, really? That's insane.
That's because I'm lying. One of them has some thinning going on up top, but I can't remember now which one it is.
Well, we'll have to check at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, at Thanksgiving. We'll make everyone lean over so we can inspect. We need to know what's going to happen to Alonzo.
Male pattern baldness.
Alonzo needs to know what's coming.
Getting back to Henry Cavill, at first I thought that he was giving this weirdly sort of kind of robotic voice, and then I realized, oh, no. He's doing Robert Vaughn.
Yes.
Robert Vaughn in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., who always had that very kind of clear, you know, Troy McClure sort of voice.
No. It's what I loved him.
And then I thought it was hilarious once I caught on to what he was doing.
Every word out of his mouth sounded like he was selling you Bufferin. It was so good.
And I thought Armie Hammer was going to tip over too far into Moose and Squirrel, but he doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
He rides the line. Yeah. He does it right. So, yeah, it's a fun movie.
Please explain Moose and Squirrel to the audience members who are too young to understand you're talking about.
There was an old TV cartoon called The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, who were a moose and squirrel.
Yes.
And the villains on the show were these two Russians, Boris Badenov and Natasha Fatal.
Yeah.
And they spoke in very thick accents. Bring me Moose and Squirrel.
So then there's Mistress America.
Yeah. The latest collaboration between director Noah Baumbach and his
muse
Greta Gerwig.
His girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a big, big fan of Frances Ha.
Me too.
So I was very excited that they were working together. I did finally watch Greenberg this weekend.
That's really good.
Streaming on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a test.
It's got a touch of the old Baumbach bitterness to it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a test because, I mean,
I will say I'm missing a little bit now that he's all in love.
It's one thing to have the sort of you know, the irritating protagonist, but Ben Stiller is so irritating in Greenberg that I just wanted to strangle him.
That's why I liked it, because I don't like Ben Stiller really at all. Okay. And so
this gave you license to not like him.
Yeah.
Did you see While We're Young, finally?
Haven't seen While We're Young, no.
So, Baumbach has had two films out this year, While We're Young with Ben Stiller, and now this new one. And this one is, I think, very much kind of a spiritual cousin of Frances Ha, in that it's about young adult women, you know, of different ages. One a college freshman, one in her early 30s, sort of.
They're 12 years apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of both on the cusp of figuring things out about themselves and their lives.
We're contemporaries.
As she says. So, Lola Kirk, whose sister is Jemima Kirk from Girls.
Oh, that makes perfect
sense.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, when I read it, I was like, oh, okay, I totally can see that.
Yes.
She plays a freshman at Barnard, which is where Mr. Baumbach attended, I think.
Oh, really?
And she is trying to get into the school literary magazine and not finding much success so far. And her mother is about to get remarried over Thanksgiving, and the mother wants her to meet the daughter of her stepfather-to-be, and that's Greta Gerwig's character. So the two of them start hanging out, and Greta Gerwig is just one of those... The character is the kind of woman who talks a mile a minute and has a million big ideas that you just know are never going to get to fruition. And,
right.
And, you know, talks a very good game about how her life is all together and what it's going to be and what she's going to accomplish, but is clearly flailing. But not willing to admit that to herself just yet.
Not in a horrible way, though.
No. Not
she's
in a way
that, happily flailing.
Yeah, she's not taking anyone down with her.
She's excited to be living in New York and,
you know she teaches at SoulCycle.
All the possibilities are coming her way, you know.
Yeah, no, she's vibrant and alive and all that stuff. But at the same time, you know, a bit of a mess. So the college student kind of, on the one hand, really admires her, but at the same time is furiously taking notes because she realizes, this is the character for my new short story. So she's kind of a user, but at the same time, you know, also, you know, tries to be a good friend. And I didn't
see her as a user, but go on.
Well, you know, maybe not even consciously so, but she is sort of, you know, behind her back, like, you know, right, creating this story.
I don't think of it as being behind the back either. I know where you're going with this.
Well, because
I don't see her as a villain at all in this. She is taking elements of Greta Gerwig's life and incorporating it into fiction.
But in her fiction, she is passing judgment on Greta Gerwig's character in a way that she would never do in person.
Yes, there is some of that.
So the whole second half...
She's talking about, like, she's 30 and holding on to the decaying carcass of her youth or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is something only an 18-year-old would say. Oh, 30? Gross! You know, like, yeah. All right, keep going.
The second half of the film is this great, just bananas kind of screwball farce where they go to Connecticut to confront... Greta Gerwig's former best friend who has married this guy that Greta Gerwig used to date, who's all rich, and they're trying to get him to invest in this apartment/bodega/hair salon that, you know, she wants to do.
Which Shane already did on the L
That's
Word.
That's true, yeah. It was
Let's
also
just
a skate,
keep it real
It was
here.
A skate park, too.
Yeah, Shane did that on the
That's
L
funny.
Word
I was
already.
I was totally thinking about that when I watched the movie. And it also involves the college student, this like boy who she's sort of stringing along, and his super possessive girlfriend. And, and things just get crazier from there. This is a really smart movie. It's really funny. You know, one of my complaints about Vacation a few weeks ago is that this is a movie that did not know how to strike the balance of having characters that you could care at all about and at the same time laugh at their misfortunes. And this movie does that brilliantly. I mean, it doesn't judge any of these characters. It very much shows you their foibles, but in a way that you still believe that they exist and can be empathetic with them and still find it funny when they fail or are called out on their, you know, shortcomings. It didn't leave me as ecstatic as Frances Ha did, but it's one of the funniest movies I've seen this year, and I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Frances Ha gives you a woman who is flailing in a desperate way.
Yes.
You're afraid. I remember feeling afraid for her through most of the film, worried for her, and... And this may be a spoiler, but too bad, because the movie's been out for like 2 years now. So if you haven't seen it, too bad.
Yeah, I recommended it ages ago. And it's been streaming on Netflix.
When at the end, when she's safe at the end, I felt such a sense of relief that it didn't... I feel like that's the satisfaction of Frances Ha. This movie, the character that Greta Gerwig plays is the same kind of flailing, but so exuberant and so never say die.
Mm-hmm. Indefatigable.
About what's coming back. About what's coming her way. Yes, indefatigable. You don't worry for her. Even if she keeps failing, even if her ideas don't work out, even if she never even tries half the ideas that she has, you figure it's going to be okay for her. Like, she's not going to let it turn to garbage.
She's going to find her place.
She's going to find her place. She's 30, which, again, is still young.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I didn't have as much investment in her character as I did in the Frances Ha character. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see enough of a villain in, Lola Kirk.
Yeah.
Is that her name?
Lola Kirk.
I didn't see enough of that in her to make, for the film to have as much ride on that conflict as it had.
I don't think that the movie sees her as a villain. I don't see her as a villain.
And I don't even think the movie feels like it's got enough of a case for their relationship to break down over this, which is why I think they send you out to the rich person's house and have this entire long sequence that doesn't really develop any characters at all. All it does is put them all in the same room and hit the blender. Mm. That's delightful, and it's really funny, and I love it when they talk fast because they all talk really fast, and they clip each other off at the end of sentences and reroute and misdirect and run from room to room, and it's like a farce on stage that you would maybe be watching with a lot of slamming doors. Mm. But what's happening? What's going on?
People are talking loudly outdoors.
People are outside. Oh, okay, there are people outside. Hey.
Hi.
I was like, where are those voices coming from?
It's really hot today, did we mention?
Yeah.
All the doors and windows are open.
All the doors and windows are open. So, this isn't as good a film as Frances Ha. It is really funny.
Yes.
And it's the kind of movie that takes a college freshman's efforts to join a literary society. That's one of the main plot points. So,
but again, I think
the audience for this movie, you know who you are.
But I think that's in the service of a larger idea of her creating her identity. And
yes.
And I think both the women are sort of figuring out what their identity in the world is going to be and how they're going to present themselves and what they're going to do with that. And I find that really fascinating.
No, it's good. It's really funny. It's a comedy for grown-up people.
Definitely.
And that is so rare.
Speaking of smart comedies about bright young New Yorkers, Whit Stillman's Metropolitan is getting a 25th anniversary reissue from Rialto. It opened last weekend in New York. It opened this weekend in Los Angeles, and I went and saw it yesterday.
Is it going to go anywhere else but New York and L.A.?
It'll make its way around, probably. I think the Rialto stuff.
If you haven't seen this, you really should.
Oh, my God.
Really,
and if you've never
wonderful.
Seen it projected, it really is amazing on the big screen. This was Stillman's debut feature that totally put him on the map. He got an Oscar nomination for Best Screenplay.
Yeah.
And it's basically about this group of
debutantes.
Debutantes, yeah. It's set during Deb season in New York, and this one college student who is not quite a New York upper cruster sort of falls in with a group known as the SFRP, the Sally Fowler Rat Pack. And he...
I just turned on my laptop because it was overheating.
And he gets involved with this group of men and women during the Deb week, and kind of it's about their lives and about their ideas of the world and you know, is their class doomed, you know, which a lot of them think they might be. And it's just so charming and funny, and the dialogue is so sparkling, and the performances are great. And I'm shocked that more people in this film didn't really have careers after this. Chris Eigenman is probably the biggest name from it. He was on Gilmore Girls. You've seen him in a lot of stuff. Taylor Nichols turns up in a few things every so often. But
I've never seen any of these other people do anything else.
No, I mean, like, well, Carolyn Farina, who plays Audrey Rouget, has a cameo as Audrey in The Last Days of Disco, but that's about it. But yeah, it's just, you know, it from the outside, it sounds like the most sort of elitist, ridiculous movie, but it's really,
it is,
but it's ultimately just about young people trying to make their way in the world and figure out who they're going to be and what they want out of life. And, you know, as much as they name drop people like, you know, Jane Austen or Fourier or whatever, they are, you know, they're flailing too.
Yeah, Whit Stillman is the, you know, he's the chronicler of preppy lives.
Right. And Greta Gerwig, actually, was the star of his most recent movie, Damsels in Distress. So
right.
It all comes around.
And I realize that I interrupted you by saying I turned on my laptop without perhaps an accompanying sound, although there was an accompanying sound.
Yes.
But only if you have great ears could you probably have heard the... oh, man, I'm at 0%. How can you be at 0% and not turn on?
I don't know how you did that.
On, but I'm at 0%.
But you're
battery.
Plugged in, so you're good. I'm so okay, so we're done with movies. We're moving on to the next section here.
Yes, that is what we're doing. So you need to pause so I can pull up information.
Okay. 10 hours later.
7 minutes. And it was just as well because there was a honking car outside, and our landlady showed up to show the next door apartment to a new potential.
Yes.
Resident here. I have reached out to actual friends to tell them that they should live next door to us.
Yes.
This is not... I don't think any of them have lifted a finger.
Well, they need to get on it.
On this front.
We got looky-loos coming over.
I like to curate my space.
Did they leave all the plants?
My living space. What? No, they're not fully gone yet.
Oh, okay.
No.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, what's your DVD pick this week, Dave?
Elena.
Mm.
Russian film. It's on Blu-ray this week.
Yes.
Russian film from director Andrei, last name unpronounceable. Zvyagintsev. Zvyagintsev. Yeah. Anyway, he made The Return, which is an astounding film. You should see that one, too, The Return. He made Leviathan from last year.
Right.
This is from 2012. This movie reminds me a lot, in one way, of Summer Hours, the Olivier Assayas film. But... sort of like the stone cold flip side of Summer Hours, you know,
the ugly inheritance battle,
the ugly side of Summer Hours. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is about a nurse who she's in a sort of late in life marriage to a man who is emotionally distant but who's got some money, and he also has an estranged adult daughter. And Elena, the nurse, she has some problem family members of her own and money needs. So the husband, his name is Vladimir, he has a heart attack. During the aftermath of the heart attack, he sort of reconciles with his estranged daughter.
Yeah.
And thus begins a sort of tense, dark, domestic thriller about a woman who will do what it takes to get what she needs.
Hmm. This is apparently coming out with
It's really good.
The imprimatur of Christopher Nolan, because the Syncope logo is on this new Blu-ray that Zeitgeist is putting out. So I don't know what his connection to it is, but that is his company.
Maybe he just wants to get it out there.
I guess, yeah. I also
put his name on it, people will watch it.
I also saw the trailer last night at CineFamily for the Brothers Quay retrospective that he's putting out. It's basically a program of, I think, three of their short films, and then a short that he made about the Brothers Quay that's touring around on 35mm.
Well, all right.
Yes.
Got some letters.
Excuse me, I have a DVD pick.
Oh, that's right, you do.
Yes.
Okay, fine. What is it?
You're the worst. My DVD pick is The Cold Light of Day, which is an eminently stupid movie, but really entertaining.
Are you kidding?
And also features Henry Cavill.
You're not kidding.
I'm not kidding. It is.
You know what? We got letters.
It is D-U-M-B, this
movie.
We got
letters to read.
But it is worth seeing, if only for the sight of Sigourney Weaver gleefully driving through a sidewalk cafe that is full of patrons.
You're right. Sigourney Weaver sort of stalks through this film.
Yeah.
It's not a good movie.
It's not a good movie, but it is.
But she is quite impressive.
And there are some fun ideas in it.
If you like that Sigourney Weaver, you will like
her. She's a blast. It is one of the few movies about regular people that get tossed into an extraordinary situation and respond to things the way regular people would.
Run!
Yeah, a lot of screaming and knocking things over, and there's nothing smooth or ninja or spy-like about it. It is just a big hot mess how they deal with being chased or whatever. So it got a bad rap, I thought. It's not a prickly good movie, but I had a good time watching it, and I think there's some fun stuff to it. So The Cold Light of Day, give it a shot.
You get a pass.
Thank you
for this one.
Your approbation means so much to me.
It does.
It's from the director of JCVD,
which is also pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi guys, greetings from St. Petersburg, Russia.
Whoa.
Yeah, we have a listener in Russia.
Well, all right.
My ability to write letters in English is so bad, so I just want to thank you for making such a great podcast.
Oh, thanks.
It's hard to describe how grateful I am towards Dave.
Don't encourage him.
For his Monica Mana recommendation.
Oh.
Watching it was a terrific experience for me. That Monica Mana is a terrific experience for everyone. Everyone should watch Monica Mana, the documentary about riding in a cable car up to the summit of a Nepalese shrine at the top of a mountain.
Do we know how the Kickstarter was going for the people who live there who were in an earthquake?
I think it's doing all right. Okay. I know we posted it a while back.
Yeah.
And I have a special and big thank you for Alonzo for We Are the Best.
Well, all right.
And his general awesomeness.
Oh, thanks.
I have a top 10 list to be knived.
Okay.
In alphabetical order. You probably did not see the Russian ones. So maybe one day you'll see them by my recommendation.
Maybe.
Children of Men.
Yeah.
A Russian film called Innocent Saturday, which I don't know.
Didn't see it.
Another Russian film called Kustolyov, My Car.
Okay. Didn't see it.
Oh. This is my friend. L'Humanité from Bruno Dumont.
Yeah, okay.
Dumont is a French or Belgian director who...
Is he the 29 Palms guy?
Yeah. He has really gone out of his way in his career to be as Bressonian as he can be. Sometimes that's successful and sometimes that is not.
I hear good things about Lil Cancan.
There are film critics in the world whose opinions I really respect who hate him.
Manola being one of them, I believe. Our friend Manola Dargis, friend of the show.
But L'Humanité came out in 2000-ish, sometime between... It may be a 1999 film, but it maybe hit the United States in 2000-2001. It's about a detective on the trail of a murder his investigation doesn't really go very far, or he sort of
smells
people to get clues.
Okay,
boy, do I love this film! It's been a long time since I've seen it, and I don't know if it's available. Like, you know, it's like it didn't make a big splash in the United States. Very few people saw it.
So you're giving him that one.
Okay. He's totally getting this one. I really, really like it. Masculine, feminine.
Yeah.
Oslo, 31 August.
Ooh, good one.
Joachim Trier's.
Super depressing.
Norwegian, real good. Incredibly depressing film that's also really great. Paper Soldier. I don't know that one. This is another Russian film from the same director of Khrushchev, My Car.
Okay. Yeah. Now, is My Car the translation for Khrushchev?
No, that's the title.
The title of Khrushchev.
Yeah. Okay. The car's name is Khrushchev, I guess.
My mother, the Khrushchev.
Yeah. Putty Hill / I Used to Be Darker, Matthew Porterfield. I haven't seen that.
The title "I Used to Be Darker" rings a bell, but
it does with me too.
I think Strand might have released it here, but I didn't
possibly
see it.
Tree of Life.
Okay.
And Toad Road by a filmmaker named Jason Banker. I've only seen about half of these movies. The ones that I know exist. The ones that I knew about before I read this letter, I've seen and I liked. Gonna have to give you the benefit of the doubt on the rest of them, so you are 100% knife because we don't know any better.
Hooray! And we will keep an eye out for the other titles.
Thank you again and goodbye. That is from Sergey.
Thanks, Sergey.
Yeah. Have we had a listener in Russia yet?
Might be our first. Don't quote me on that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Russia, New Zealand, they're all over the planet.
All right. Pause it for a moment.
Okay.
Cindy in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Russia. Hawaii.
Spanning the globe.
Hawaii is basically as far away as Russia.
Ish.
Yeah. To Mr. Duraldi and Mr. White, in this week's podcast, you mentioned that you guys know producer, screenwriter Brian Fuller. I'm a fan of Mr. Fuller's from his work on Dead Like Me, Wonderfalls, and Pushing Daisies. I do not watch Hannibal. It is way too much for me. You also mentioned that Mr. Fuller has his own Funko Pop doll that was sold exclusively at the 2015 San Diego Comic-Con. I checked eBay to see if anyone was selling their dolls, and I found these two listings. She provides the links to the listings. That's right. $500 effing.
Well, apparently they made only a gross of them and sold them exclusively at Comic-Con.
144 of them exist.
And most of them, I'm sure, were snapped up by prospectors. Like those people that line up for the shoes at Supreme.
$500.
Mm, yeah.
This is from James. James in London.
Oh, James.
Yes. Love that you covered two films that fascinated me for very different reasons this week. Windows. And Showgirls. Regarding Windows, I was consuming all manner of films about homicidal lesbians for a chapter of my university dissertation titled Killer Dykes.
Cuts right to the point.
Can't tell I was young and dumb from that title, can you? And Windows, well, you know, but here's the thing, though. I don't know how old James is, but in the 90s...
Dyke got reclaimed in a way that queer did.
Queer and dyke and fag all became words that were yes, reclaimed. They were used constantly in the queer community.
In the discourse.
In the LGBT world. And they were used among us, by us, for us, among us... Alison Bechdel's beloved comic strip.
Dykes to Watch
Out
For.
From that era, Dykes to Watch Out For.
Dykes on Bikes.
So, Dykes on Bikes. They lead the gay pride parade. So, you know...
We'll allow it.
People now are reshaping their ideas about these words.
Right.
But to me...
There was a time when they needed to be defanged.
An old person who lived in the 90s, you know, those words were used. Yeah. And I used them.
But the people who were already old in the 90s objected.
They sure did.
Yeah.
A lot. We were considered young, snotty people for using those words among ourselves. Yeah. Anyway, Windows was one of the last ones I managed to track down on VHS, and I think I watched it with my jaw unhinged in a sheer what-the-hell-am-I-watching mode for the entire run. The main thing I took from it is that lesbians love sweaters. Anyway, it was weird but awesome to hear it get a mention and a deserved slating. And Showgirls, well, y'all know I love this film immensely, but I am also well aware of its shortcomings, so it was great to hear a film like this getting some proper critical analysis for a change. Dave White, please pester the BFI Film Classics series to let you do an edition on Showgirls. I would read the ish out of that. As ever, thanks for the great podcast and keeping me up to date on lots of films I should be watching but never have any time to actually watch. Seriously, last weekend was the first time I've been to the cinema properly in months to see Inside Out, which I really enjoyed. All the best, James from London. P.S. You are overdue a shipment of chocolates, I bet, although it is freaking boiling out there, so maybe I should wait until it all doesn't melt en route to you.
Good idea.
James sent us a box of English chocolates. Mm-hmm. All the kinds that you can get at the 7-Elevens over there. It was really great to get that box
of those Cadbury bars.
Yeah, and it was nice. Very nice.
More burnt almond, please.
We're big fans of James and his shipments of chocolate. This is from Daniel. Hi, guys. On the movies that will never be on DVD, they are generally not good copies, and I don't know how long they'll last on YouTube, but you can see Superstar, the Karen Carpenter story, there.
True.
On YouTube.
Yes, you can indeed.
I hesitate to point them out because I'm sure it's not legal, but I've only ever seen it on crappy VHS, so these are all about that quality. One movie I would love to see on DVD is Movie with George C. Scott.
Oh yeah, that's the last good Stanley Donen film.
I saw it in the theaters when I was a young teen and really liked it, but I have no idea if it was actually any good. I mostly remember a crazy dance number by Fosse dancer Anne Reinking called Torchin' for Bill, where she wore a crazy fright wig and did some amazing kicks over her head. Keep up the good show. Daniel.
Yeah, Movie is fun. It's a tribute to old films, and it's a self-contained double feature. The first half, I believe, is called Dynamite Hands, and it's like a black and white boxing movie.
Right.
And then the second half is a big splashy color musical. Both feature George C. Scott, who does not sing, I think. But, you know, I was thinking more about, we had the letter about movies that aren't on DVD and what would we want to see, and I had totally forgotten that I have an entire stack of Laserdiscs of movies that are precisely that, of movies that have not been made available on DVD and should. So it occurred to me some other titles that I did not talk about before. The New Age, written and directed by Michael Tolkien, the guy who wrote The Player and wrote and directed The Rapture.
Uh-huh.
It's a great movie about late 20th century anime and materialism, starring Judy Davis and Peter Weller. The French French comedy Tati Daniel has never been out on DVD in the US.
Really?
Yeah, which is a great movie. Also Sticky Fingers, although that is streaming on Netflix these days, but also not on DVD. I'm trying to think what my other laser discs that I got. Claude Lelouch's 1995 Les Miserables.
Which also not on DVD.
Never been released on DVD in the U.S. So great. Yeah. Tell the story.
I think I already have told this story, maybe.
Maybe.
On the show. But you and I, we had just started dating. Like, we had been hanging out as friends for a good 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
But we had just sort of begun dating. Like, we were a couple at this point. And we went to see Les Miserables.
Oh, we didn't just go see it. I was hosting a screening.
No. This was
a USA Film Festival screening.
Was it a USA Film Festival screening?
It was a member screening.
Oh, I don't remember that part of it.
No, I do.
But it was at the Ciné.
Yes.
In Dallas. The long,
the late lamented UA Ciné.
Did they ever tear that down?
They did.
Such a beautiful old theater that was. That 60s gold and
big box.
Green and just nice. And there's a really, it's a really moving adaptation of Les Miserables, and there's a a scene at the end that caused you to burst into tears. And you sobbed really sort of heavily.
Yeah.
For a while.
It was the first time you'd seen me movie cry.
Yeah. And then during the credits, you started crying again. Just remember, like you were remembering your cry from 30 minutes ago, and you started doing it again. And I had never seen you movie cry before. And the whole way home, I remember not saying anything. Like, I didn't say a word the whole way home. And then we got home, and I was like, do you want to talk about something? Like, is there anything you need to discuss? Is this a... Are you having an emotional problem right now? You know, because I don't... When I cry, it's in my real life about my life. You know, something bad has happened in my life, and then I will cry. Even that doesn't happen very often, but...
It's because you're soft.
But I don't really cry in movies unless it's, you know, War Horse. Oh, and gosh. So...
Nay.
I was very sort of concerned. I remember being just like, what's happening with him right now? Is he okay?
You thought I was being triggered or something.
I thought it was, yeah. And then it turned out that you're just a baby in movies. You cry in movies all the time.
I'm a feeling person.
You feel at movies. You don't feel in life.
That's true.
You have no feelings in life.
Outside the theater. I'm a cold-ass mofo. In the theater.
You're a crybaby booby.
Pretty much. Only for the right movie, though. Like I always say, there's nothing worse than the last 30 minutes of a tearjerker that you aren't crying at.
No, then it's Sweet November and you're cracking up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The Charlize Theron Sweet November.
Yes, not the Sandy Dennis, which we have still not seen.
No, I haven't seen the original. I've just seen the hilarious
Having seen the remake, we're not running out to see the original.
We're done.
We are done. Thank you as always for listening. And of course, we thank Blue for our wonderful theme music. Find out more about him and go buy his stuff at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast and Malton on Movies and the Canon. B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, of course. What are you doing?
Every time I pull up the Facebook page, this video starts going without my... even hitting it.
Oh, that's the worst.
Anyway, go on.
The B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Schmoes Know, the Joelle Ryan thing, if you caught her on our show recently. She has her own weekly program. And a new show I wanted to point out that we're really enjoying and are both going to be featured on very soon, Sewers of Paris, hosted by Matt Baum. It is a pop culture podcast about the culture that shaped gay men as they reached adulthood. So we'll be talking to him soon. We're looking forward to that. Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting, SVU, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this program for free on iTunes. Please leave us a review. It does help people find the show. And we very much want to thank... Billy Bayer and Zval for leaving us very nice reviews. We really appreciate it.
What's that other name?
Zval.
Spell that.
Z-V-A-H-L.
Zval.
Yeah. Maybe it's the director of Elena.
That's a cool name.
That's the undercover iTunes name.
I don't know.
Anyway, but we appreciate the good reviews, and please keep those coming. It does help people find the show. You can also, of course, stream the program at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com and leave us positive feedback there. There's also an app to stream the program at our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Please go like it if you haven't already. You can also join the Linoleum Knife group page where our fans of the show meet to talk about movies and other topics. And subscribe to our YouTube channel. I know I need to add some more episodes, but we've been putting some of our very earliest episodes up as YouTube files.
How long has it been since you've added an episode?
It's been a couple weeks.
You need to get on that.
I will get on that.
Do
this
it.
Week. I will. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at LinoleumCast. And drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with any questions or comments. We are backlogged on letters, but we are doing our best to get caught up with those. So
we'll get to them when we get to them.
So in the meantime, keep writing to us. We appreciate it. And, of course, linoleumpodcast@gmail.com is also where you can PayPal us for our extra Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes. Our latest is What's Up, Doc, but you can also get The Poseidon Adventure or Clue or Josie and the Pussycats or Two for the Road or The Apple. And those are $1.99 each. And just PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to include the email address where you want those files sent. And we'll see you next time.
Did you talk about Instagram?
I mentioned Instagram.
Did you?
Twitter and Instagram.
We're new on Instagram.
At Linoleum.
We are slaying on Instagram right now.
It's so true.
Yeah.
There's a picture of me with Shaun the Sheep.
Yes.
Among other things.
It's pretty great. That picture of you with Shaun the Sheep.
Well, you know, I'm all about the Instagram.
I need to go see that.
You do.
I know.
You'll really enjoy it. Yeah. Even though, again, it's those Aardman puns that don't work in American English.
Well, yeah.
You know, there was Arthur Christmas, which doesn't work if you don't say it Arthur.
Yeah.
And Shaun the Sheep is only funny because they say it Shorn.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something like that.
Right.
So anyway, but nonetheless, that title business aside, very funny movie. You'll really like it. Anyway, this has been lovely as always. We'll catch you guys next time.
Goodbye.